I raked leaves last weekend, and at this time of year, I lament, you know, that I think in a perfect world, and I think I've said this before on the air, leaves would fall. All leaves would all fall in a 24-hour period. And I sort of got my wish. I raked over last weekend, and then we had a lot of rain on Monday. And let me tell you, my backyard with our sycamore tree, it's like a yellow carpet. And I'm going back home, and I'm going to... I have a frog in my throat. I'm going to go home and rake, and I'm going to love it because... You know, I would say a good 75% of the leaves fell out of the sycamore tree. And I love raking at this time of year.
Yes, and you have a few days without precipitation.
Exactly. And nothing is worse than bagging wet leaves. So I'm going to be bagging dry and crisp leaves and then give them to a friend out in Coburn Culver who recycles them in his vast gardens.
Jen, another hat that you wear... is as the Lumber Jill, a frequent contributor to the Sandpoint Reader. You have a relationship with trees as well, don't you?
I do, yeah. My husband and I have been running an arborist business here for about 12 or so years, Sand Creek Tree Service. So that's been my jam for a long time, hanging out in the trees. So it doesn't necessarily seem like a rational segue to go from running chainsaws to fighting for reproductive rights, but... somehow it worked for me.
Do you have rakes with you, or do you just have chainsaws?
Yes, we have rakes with us. Yes.
She's armed. I have a desert island question for you. You're on a desert island, and you have room for one tree.
Ooh.
What would that one tree be?
Ooh, that's a good question. Well, are we looking at this tree from an aesthetic point of view, or from a... survival.
Well, you pick an apple tree or something like that, I guess, for survival. But I just think of aesthetically, if you could just be alone with one tree.
Oh, gosh. That's a good question.
I don't mean to put you on the spot there.
I'm a fan of Dawn Redwoods. Like the large trees, they lose their needles in the fall and turn a lovely shade of sort of bronze. They're very beautiful. Yeah. And we actually thought that those trees were extinct for a long time. And we'd seen them in the fossil record, and then it turns out they were still around somewhere hiding in China, I think. Cool. So I think in the 1950s, we brought them back.
I'm going to have to go look.
Say that
look
again.
Them up.
Dawn Redwood.
Yeah.
D-A-W-N.
Mm-hmm.
And how about you, Jack?
I think I would probably do a willow.
Willow?
A nice willow tree. You know, something.
If on a desert island, it would have enough water. Willows love water.
Yes, they're always. But I guess there's many different kinds of willows. I'm thinking of the one that really spreads out. You know, the very the wide one.
The weeping willow.
Yes, weeping willow tree.
Cool, cool.
I think so.
Just had to ask.
Yeah, and Jim,
we have it in our front yard. It started as an acorn. 20 years ago, and it's up about 30 feet high, a beautiful oak tree.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, we got a clump. We moved into this house, and we got from friends a clump of ladies' mantle, you know, and we put them out, and I guess there was an oak tree because all of a sudden a little oak tree started popping up, and after about 4 years, you know, we needed to move it because where it was located close to the house, and we did that, and it's about 30 feet high now. And I have to admit, I go out and look at it, and I sort of touch it at times, and I'm just thrilled. So in another 20 years, it ought to be huge. So I would say my oak tree.
Yeah.
That's, up front.
That's fun to be able to watch it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's how you measure. You know, I don't have any children, and children are a yard marker for the passage of time, like James.
Like James.
You know, but I don't have any children, so it's the oak tree up front.
Yeah. Well, that's a nice thought. Yes.
Yeah. And I sort of like it. But okay, we can move on now to the other hat that Jen wears.
Well, I get. Why don't you tell us? So you have been on this radio station before a number of times, including we did a series together called "The Worth of a Woman," or you put it on, but KRFY was involved in the kind of the audio portion of, yes, of that. The Pro Voice Project itself, for those who aren't aware of what you do, is this a first introduce the group. What is the Pro Voice Project?
Yeah, so the Pro Voice Project, I started this here in Sandpoint a couple years ago. Our focus is to be talking about reproductive rights, talking about abortion, destigmatizing that conversation, and working to help people find the courage and the willingness to be visible on this issue, because people have been rather reticent over the years to talk about abortion. It's seems like a four-letter word for a lot of people. And so what we've been doing, among other things, is putting on stage performances around the state that highlight Idahoan stories of abortion and reproductive health care. So we've been gathering stories from around the state. We've put on stage productions here in Sandpoint, Moscow, McCall, Boise, Idaho Falls, Pocatello, Ketchum. We've been all over the place. They've been very well received, and the experience has been rather cathartic for a lot of people in the audience, and I think has spurred people to share their own stories, if they have them, and just be talking about this issue more. We've also been talking a lot about women's health care, reproductive health care, and the way that Idaho's abortion bans have impacted healthcare offerings here. And, you know, we're really familiar with the fallout from those laws here in Bonner County with the loss of labor and delivery department at Bonner General. So we have this artistic and educational exhibit called Worth of a Woman that looks at systemic barriers to reproductive healthcare access, not just legislative barriers like we've seen here, but, you know, barriers like shame and stigma. We're looking at rising maternal mortality rates. We're looking at how women's healthcare is undervalued and understudied in comparison to men's healthcare concerns. So it's really about just sparking a conversation about these things that we've been a little bit squeamish to talk about in the past. Because the things you're not talking about, you're not fighting for. And these are things we really need to be fighting for.
Is it now? We're 2 days out from a national and local election. Is this a partisan organization, or do you talk to people on both sides of the aisle?
No, I've been talking to people on both sides of the aisle, absolutely, and have been talking to faith leaders across the state as well. This is very much a nonpartisan issue, and I would say it's one of the few issues that we saw on Tuesday night that was nonpartisan. You know, abortion was voted on in 10 states across the country that night. And we saw a lot of people, millions of people, voting for Trump, but also voting for abortion rights in their state. That's a very common thing that happened. And so, you know, I see most of the votes came down, you know, like ranked choice voting and that sort of thing. For some reason, those votes came down across party lines largely, but abortion did not. You know, Donald Trump, I mean, he ran away with it in Florida, but also abortion rights there got 57% of the vote. Granted, it didn't pass. It had a 60% hurdle to get over. Mm-hmm. But I think that is interesting that people can hold both. They can hold the idea that reproductive rights are essential and also vote for Trump, which if you're, I see that as a vote that cancels itself out, because I don't think Donald Trump will be too kind to abortion rights during his term, but that remains to be seen.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to The Morning Show here on 88.5 KRFY, and we're talking to Jen Jackson Quintano from the Pro Voice Project, the executive director. I'd like to say about this radio station that we're nonpartisan as well, and I'm sure that we have plenty of listeners on both, you know, who were on both sides of the election on Tuesday. Some people are probably very happy about the results, and plenty aren't. You know, I was at an event on Friday. We were broadcasting, and I overheard somebody say, referring to me, there's the liberal radio DJ, or there's the liberal radio host, where I think we've always tried to be very impartial in representing ourselves at KRFY, especially on among, you know, local candidates. We ask the same questions of everybody. Everybody's invited to come on these airwaves because it belongs to the people.
And I will say, like, speaking of local candidates and, you know, I would like to look at Jim Woodward and Mark Sauter and how they ran their campaigns. And women's health care is not a partisan issue. Both of those candidates, Republicans, talked about that issue extensively during their campaign. It's important to them because it's important to all of us. You know, we want to have the ability to birth babies in this community. We want to have health care options for all the women of this community. So, you know, that's another example where this is not a partisan issue.
And Jen, I'd like to, I still have that little frog in my throat. I'd like to ask you if, in fact, women's health is a nonpartisan issue, why is it an issue at all?
You know, we've been fed this idea that abortion is this really divisive issue. And it's true that there are people on both sides that feel very strongly about their beliefs. But if you look at polling, both in Idaho and nationally, you see that, you know, a vast majority of people support reproductive rights, and even more than that, support, you know, no government intrusion in medical care, in the exam room. You know, I think we just have, you know, I've had this idea of abortions being very divisive since high school, when we had to debate that as a topic. Like, you know, it just was this sense of half the people feel this and half the people feel this, and it's much more nuanced than that. But there is, you know, there's been a big pushback ever since Roe v. Wade went into place 50-some years ago. And people feel strongly about their position against Roe, and they've been laying the framework to take that down for a very long time.
You mentioned they have been laying the framework. Who is the they?
Well, there's a fascinating book that came out this year called The Fall of Roe. I highly recommend it, and it takes you through all of the stuff going on behind the scenes to dismantle that Supreme Court ruling. And it comes down to a lot of people of faith in positions like the head of the Federalist Society, even Kellyanne Conway, is a part of this move. They feel very strongly that Roe was a mistake, and this comes from their place of faith, and they feel that it is important to rescind the right to abortion. Not everyone agrees with them, of course, but they've had great success with the connections that they've got to lay the groundwork for that, getting justices in place that would, you know, take that down. It's so interesting to read about it, because one of the architects behind this, Leonard Leo, he and his wife were pregnant and were told that their baby was not going to survive, that the fetus was not compatible with life. They went ahead and carried the pregnancy to term. Their child was born with a lot of problems, and I don't know that she ever spoke. I think she was confined to a wheelchair and just had a struggle with life, but she lived longer than anyone expected. And Leonard Leo and his wife looked at this as a sign, you know, that their baby came into the world to show that abortion is a sin and to save other children. And so they've taken this crusade forward, looking at their life and their faith, which I understand, you know, this was a miracle in their life that this baby survived at all. What I take issue with is, you know, making their miracle a directive for me or my daughter or, you know, people in my circle or women in general. But this was a profoundly impactful experience in their life, and they just made it their crusade to push forward and save other children that they saw through the lens of their own daughter.
So the repeal by the Supreme Court of Roe versus Wade certainly has brought women's reproductive rights and women's health care right back into the limelight.
Absolutely.
With the focus on it.
Absolutely. Yes. And the thing about the Roe years, you know, we had that in place for nearly a half century, and we didn't talk about it too much. It was like, while we had those protections, a lot of women, you know, were able to access needed abortions, but they didn't tell those stories and they didn't talk about how this helped them. And I think that has done us a disservice to not be talking about the ways we've been served by this, the ways we've been saved by this. And so I think that made it easier to dismantle because there wasn't this groundswell of like, we support this. We are grateful for this. This is the way that it has saved my life or, you know, someone close to me. And so that's why I focus on storytelling right now is we need to get those stories out there. We need to paint the broad picture of how this has helped people and protected their health and protected their futures. So I think we're seeing more public discourse about this now, especially because it's so the impacts of a lot of these bans are so profoundly harmful. We're hearing a lot of those stories.
Okay. We're here with Jen Jackson Quintano here on 88.5 KRFY, the morning show. Let's take a break, and then I'd like to hear more about the Pro-Voice Project itself and what are some of the activities that's going on. Jack,
mm-hmm.
I hear there's a birthday in your family.
Why, yes, Jim.
Talk more.
It's my mother's birthday.
Mrs. Peterson.
Uh-huh. November 7th. Fern Peterson. She would be...
We
don't need to say.
Yeah.
I'd have to do a little math anyway. I don't know how old she is.
She remembers a time before cell phones.
Yes. Safe to say. And so we'll play a little birthday song for her.
And Jen said she had a couple birthdays on this date, November 7th.
True. Yes. My sister-in-law, Michelle Quintano, it's her birthday today. And then a dear, dear friend of mine, Margie Hoffman, it's also her birthday.
Where are they located?
Margie is in Bend, Oregon, and Michelle is in the Seattle area.
Cool. They stayed in sort of like the western, northwestern area. This comes from the White Album and, of course, the Beatles.
Here we go.
To Jack's mom and Jen's friends.
You're listening to The Morning Show on 88.5 KRFY. That was, of course, The Beatles, and that was off of the White Album from 1968, a song called Birthday. There's some birthdays in the audience.
Is your mom going to have a cake?
I bet she is. I don't know. She's in Minnesota. I'm not going to have a
cake. I thought she was here.
She was visiting. She was visiting last week. She was here a week ago.
I thought she was still here.
Nope. It was just blew through town for the weekend and then back to the Midwest.
Those traveling.
I know. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're...
Yes, go ahead. You're listening to The Morning Show on 88.5 KRFY. This is Pan Am.
Jim and Jack.
I'm Jack, that's Jim, and we're here with Jen. All right.
JJJ.
Uh-huh. Three J's.
I like it.
Jen Jackson Quintano is the executive director of the Pro Voice Project, and we've been talking about... let's talk more about the Pro Voice Project. I guess before we talk about kind of what comes next, because I'm sure things have changed and are changing and you're going to have to adjust, but like a week ago, if I had asked you what's the Pro Voice up to these days and what's coming up on what's on your horizon, what would you have said then?
Yeah. So programming that we're looking at for the coming year would be more of these stage performances. And just to give a little more detail about that, what we do is we solicit stories from the communities that we put these on in. So these performances are the voice of the community. And we do that through, I put on writing workshops where people can work with their stories and expand upon them and get comfortable with them. And then we work with local playwrights and performers to put together their own production. And as I said, we've done that in 7 communities and we've had, you know, just in Ketchum a couple of weekends ago, we had 320 people come out to see the performance. Yeah. In Boise, we had 465 people. Even here in Sandpoint, we had nearly 200 people come out. So there is something about this storytelling enterprise that is really resonating with people and speaking to them. I think we're hungry to talk about this because it is so much in the public consciousness right now, and to hear how it's impacting us locally. So I'm hoping to, I'm working with people in Twin Falls to bring it there. There's interest in Bonner's Ferry in Coeur d'Alene, so I'm talking with folks there. And there's calls to bring it back to Boise. So those are sort of the plans for the coming year for the stage performances. And as I mentioned, we have that educational exhibit, Worth of a Woman. It's been up here in Sandpoint. I had it up in Coeur d'Alene for a conference. It's currently in Ketchum at a few different locations there. And then it'll be moving to Boise after that. So this, you know, started here in Sandpoint, but this is really about reaching out statewide to spark these conversations. We're also working on some documentary films, some short documentary films. We just completed our first one called Overturned. And this spring, I traveled the state and spoke with women who had to travel out of state for medically necessary abortion care and heard their heartbreaking stories. And we put their stories together along with a physician's story to create this short film to just sort of give a picture of how these laws impact people, not just those who are seeking an abortion, but people who are pregnant and really want these children. You know, they've been trying so hard for these pregnancies, sometimes for years, and then to have something go wrong and not be able to receive the medically necessary care that they need at home, and then to have to travel hundreds and hundreds of miles. It's inhumane. You know, on the worst day of your life, to hear that this much wanted pregnancy is not viable, and then to just sort of get kicked out of the clinic and have to find another place to go away from family and friends and support networks is tough. So we just completed our first one. We just did some interviews over in Ketchum for our next installment, some more heartbreaking stories. Yeah, we're working on that. More writing workshops to come. I have so many things I have to keep a list. I lose track.
Do you have any writing workshops in the area coming up?
The plan is to put one on in Coeur d'Alene, actually, ahead of the stage performance there. So we're trying to finalize dates right now, but I'm hoping in sort of the March timeframe to put one on in Coeur d'Alene, and I will keep people posted on that. Those have been really powerful events, the writing workshops, tearful and but just really empowering for people too to find their voice around this issue.
Describe the stage performance a little more. These are actors or just readers? Who's
actors? Mm-hmm. So the one we just had in Ketchum, we had six performers there. I think we had, 14 stories as a part of the show. And so each performer, you know, sort of inhabits several of the stories and brings them to life on the stage. It is a little bit easier, I think, to have performers convey these stories than to have the people who carry these stories step up. Some people don't want to be that public about it. Some people, there's some emotion around that story and it would be hard to share with an audience, you know, so it's worked out quite well. My abortion story was a part of the Ketchum stage performance. And even though that story happened, 15 years ago, and I don't carry a lot of emotional content around it, to have someone perform it and to receive it was a very emotional experience. I cried. Mm-hmm. But I think what I've heard from people in the audience who have received their stories is that it's very healing for them, that they can, you know, receive that and understand the power of receiving that. And then it empowers them to share with others in their life.
Isn't part of that you're not alone?
Yes. Yes.
Exactly. You know, that your experience and sharing that connects you. And the importance of, you know, all of the stigma that's associated with something like abortion, you know, that you're not alone. And I think that's healthy.
Absolutely. You know, we've carried these stories silently for so long, and that leads us to believe that we're the only ones, or there's something defective about us or something. You know, it's that shame and that stigma. But then when you learn that so many people you know have gone through the same experience, you know, for different circumstances, that's incredibly powerful to build community in that. And I think it helps people to embrace their own experience and not see it as some sort of outlier. Mm-hmm. And after these performances, I can't tell you how many times it's happened where, you know, these performances have happened and then people will approach me afterwards and share their story, you know, in the frozen food aisle or at the library or it just sort of creates space for people to be open and honest.
And it's a healing process, you know, to get, you know, as one who dealt with writing, that getting it outside the self and looking at it in words and, you know, that there's a sort of freeing there. There's a sort of liberating as well as connecting and all the other good things. I think that's a wonderful notion you're working with, Jen.
And it's a means of building empathy rather than antagonism, which mm-hmm. is something that really appeals to me. This topic has for so long resided in the political realm, which is a really poor container for an experience and a decision like that. And so I just think being able to share and receive stories, it provides a more expansive space to really explore nuance and to understand this, which I think is so important. Like, we can argue black and white, you know, back and forth till the cows come home, but to actually hear people's stories and be in a receptive space, I think that creates community, as you mentioned, and healing too.
Are there any men's stories with this? I'm sure that there are. Yeah, when you were talking about the worth of a woman, would we ever have anything like the worth of a man? We just take it for granted. We're valuable, but women, you have to work for it. You have to remind us, because we have a tendency to forget. But I'm quite sure that some of the stories, some of the experiences involve men.
Absolutely. Yes, we do have men's stories as a part of our library, and they've been a part of our stage productions. I would love more men's stories. I also understand that that's tricky. I received a story from someone last year, and he wrote a beautiful story and very vulnerable and a lot of emotion in it and empathy for his partner. And he shared it with me, and then he shared it with a friend of his, a female friend of his, and she kind of condemned him for writing that story and sharing it and told him, this is not your story to share. How dare you? Why would you do that? And I think that's a problem in this. You know, I do feel like men, the kind of men who would want to share this story, who are sensitive to this issue, are concerned that this isn't their story to share, that are they're concerned that, you know, this happened to their partner. She should be the one to convey it. But it happens to both parties, you know? I mean, especially if you're close and connected to your partner. And I just think there is so much room to hear men's experience on this, because they're invested too. It takes two to get into the position of needing an abortion, right? So I would welcome more men's stories, more men's voices. We've joked that we should start a brother organization called the Bro Voice Project. if anyone wants to spearhead that, let me know.
Do you have a website? If anyone out there is listening and has a story or would like to find out more,
yes,
where does one go?
Theprovoiceproject.com.
Okay, is there a hyphen between pro and voice?
All one word, theprovoiceproject.com.
With the word the?
Yes.
The Pro Voice Project.com.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
What comes next? What are you working on now? Anything at all? Anything locally? Anything, I don't know, statewide? Are you in touch with people now that these new election results are in? And they're, to some extent, they're surprising, I think.
So, you know, we'll continue with the programming that we've set in motion that I talked about before. We'll keep getting these stories out there. I think that's so important. The big thing is that Idaho will have an opportunity in 2026 to vote on reproductive rights. There's a ballot initiative campaign underway. Language has been submitted for that. And we ought to see that kick into full swing next year. So that's something exciting. The polling shows that we, even in Idaho, we have support for an initiative like this. And, you know, I think it's something like 63% of Idahoans think that our laws have gone too far, and they believe that abortion should be legal in some or all circumstances. 63% is a pretty good number. And, you know, that includes people that are just all in on abortion rights. And it also includes people that may consider themselves pro-life, but understand that the laws that we have are really harmful. And they're problematic, that we're losing physicians statewide. We're losing labor and delivery departments. We're not able to serve healthy, wanted pregnancies. You know, when you try to legislate one form of healthcare, one portion of pregnancy, it necessarily has a ripple effect through the whole enterprise. So that's the big thing on the horizon, is that ballot initiative. We're very excited about that. And I think all interested parties will be working together to support that.
The Pro-Voice Project is kind of a, you're focused on the narrative and the storytelling part of it. I guess here locally, Bonner General Health doesn't have labor and delivery right now.
Correct.
No, they're the closest labor and delivery room or, you know, department is in Coeur d'Alene or Newport.
Yeah,
Newport, Washington.
Which is problematic, you know, and we've lost all four of our OBGYNs. So it's not that we've just lost the ability to birth babies here. We've lost all reproductive health care options here. You have to travel for any of that, no matter what life stage you're in. And, you know, for some of us, it may sound simple to hop in the car and go to Coeur d'Alene. But when you consider how often you have to go in for prenatal appointments, especially if you have a high-risk pregnancy, if you're driving down to Coeur d'Alene once a week, how many people in our community can afford that? How many people have a reliable vehicle that can do that drive once a week? How many people have the kind of job that they can take off time to do that? How many people have childcare for the other children at home? You know, I think about our Amelia Huntsberger, who used to practice here, and her talking about how some of her patients were living in their cars or living in tents while they were pregnant. Those folks are not going to be able to make the quote-unquote simple drive to Coeur d'Alene or Newport.
Or the weather.
Yeah, or the weather, exactly. My daughter was born in December, and it was hard enough to drive all the way down Rapid Lightning Road. I can't imagine having then to append the drive to Coeur d'Alene.
There's been, I guess, rumors and talk about something, you know, about labor and delivery coming back in some form, or OBGYNs coming back in some form. This is really a question, I suppose, for Bonner General Health, but have you heard anything that you can share on?
I know the will is there. I know that BGH would love to bring that back. I think it's going to be an expensive endeavor, and it would be worth talking with them about how the funds are raised for that. I also think it's difficult to recruit physicians in Idaho right now. It's a difficult climate to work in. It's why we're losing so many, you know, right in the 15 months after Dobbs, we lost nearly a quarter of our reproductive health care providers. And we're not seeing a similar influx of providers. It's difficult conditions to work under. And I just had a conversation with a physician friend of mine last weekend, and she's at a breaking point. You know, this is the stress of this, and just waiting for that patient to walk through the door who has something terribly wrong going on, where her life is on the line, and feeling like, you know, this physician feeling like her hands are tied. She's fearful of that every day. There are so many patients that are getting airlifted out of our state and sent largely to Salt Lake for care. And the doctors in Utah are saying, hey, you know, can you please take care of your patients there? This is terrible to have people on death's door arriving in our hospitals. But physicians are so fearful here. They're so fearful, and it's not a welcoming place. So I'm not sure what recruitment will look like for BGH until our laws change.
There was last Sunday on 60 Minutes on CBS on exactly what you're talking about in Texas and women being forced to go to New Mexico. And I'm quite sure you can go to CBS's website and look up 60 Minutes for that part of the program that dealt with women's reproductive rights and, you know, in a state as large as Texas. And there was a lot of conversation with physicians and about the jeopardy in their careers and why they're moving out of state and going elsewhere. So just to echo.
Yeah. And because of this climate of fear that physicians are working under, not just in Idaho, but also in states like Texas, quality of care is diminishing, you know? And we're seeing right now ProPublica is running a series of articles. They've taken it upon themselves to comb through death records in anti-abortion states and find cases that we haven't been hearing about of women dying because of pregnancy complications that are entirely treatable, but not under abortion bans. And so we're seeing those stories. They're heartbreaking, but we're seeing those stories come to life. And I'm sure there are many more out there that they will be uncovering.
In the few minutes we have left before I think Brendan is going to come up from the Panada and we'll all change our focus and look ahead at the fun weekend of upcoming events here in Sandpoint. Is there anything locally, anything for our listeners who are going to be mostly here in Bonner County, any events on the horizon or anything they should look out for from you?
Yes, I will keep folks posted. I kind of wanted to make it through the election and see what happened and then figure out how to regroup. But I'm hoping to put together a viewing of our documentary film, Overturned, and a discussion after that. And I would also just love I'm hoping in the next month to just plan a gathering where we can just get together and be in community with one another as those of us who support reproductive rights and women's rights and LGBTQ rights. You know, some people are feeling a little gut punched right now. And yesterday was so amazing as I was out and about in town. I can't tell you how many hugs I got. You know, we were just, that's the power of community right there, where we could just come together and hug one another and be present. And people just checking in. And I think that is so incredible. People in our community, some of us are feeling outnumbered right now, but we're not alone. And so I think a gathering where we can come together and see that is really important. So I'll be planning that in the next week or two, and we'll get the word out.
Okay. We'll spread the word. What else were we were going to say? I guess just if you're interested or representative of a group that has thoughts on women's health care, CareFY has open doors to you. So if somebody wants to get in touch and we want to talk further about this issue, reach out. The phone number here is 208-265-2992. Don't call right now. We're on the air, but give us a call later on today or reach out. My personal email is jpeterson@krfy.org. No period in there.
And once again, it's the Pro-Voice Project
.com,
and there's no hyphen in there. Jen, want to thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. Thanks for having me.
You betcha. And before we bring Brendan in from the Panada Theater, we're going to play a song. On this date in 1979, the movie The Rose with Bette Midler was premiered in Los Angeles, California. And the movie itself, Bette Midler got a Best Actress nomination. There was a Best Supporting Actor nomination and a couple other awards. But here is the story of Mary Rose Foster, loosely Janis Joplin's story. But here's the title cut from the song, The Rose.
Some say love, it is a risk. Some say love, it is a razor that leaves your soul.
It's 88.5 KRFY. We're uh-oh, and Brendan's locked out. You're listening to...
What's the magic word?
You don't have to go, Jen, but you can if you want to. You got a busy day, I'm sure. You're listening to the morning show here. It's Jim and Jack, and we're just saying goodbye to Jen Jackson Quintano, and hello to our old friend, Brendan Kelty. How are you doing this morning, Brendan? Take a seat at microphone number 3 there.
I'm doing better for seeing you.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. we're here on November 7th, and if you're here, that means we must be talking about what's coming up in town, and especially at the Panetta Theater.
You betcha.
You want to kick things off? What's going on this weekend?
On? We're prepping right now. We got Unit Zuso coming in.
When is that? That's coming tomorrow. Right up.
That's tomorrow evening.
Oh, man.
Friday evening.
Okay.
And what that is it's a presentation of Taiko-style Japanese drumming.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be great. POAC is presenting it,
mm-hmm.
Ponderay Arts Council. And they're going to kick the day off with an educational showing for the kids, for elementary school kids at the Panetta in the morning. And then in the evening, of course, there's going to have the main presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And... It's super interesting. This style of drumming has been around since 500 CE.
Okay.
It's an old tradition, but with a new twist that they've put together.
The constant state of otherness is the subtitle here. And I'm looking at the pictures on the Panetta Theater. Unfortunately, we can't show them on the air, but, wish we could. This looks very cool. And the Ponderay Arts Council continues to do a great job of bringing in folks. You expect a big crowd at this one?
I think so. Yeah, tickets are moving. Mm-hmm. And we've put a lot of info out there, especially with all the kids. You know, they're excited to make the field trip over there. So I think they're letting their parents know and tickets are moving.
Yeah. So that's coming up tomorrow. Already tomorrow. I can't believe there's it's time already for the next POAC Performing Arts Series concert. And what else?
Warren Miller 75. 75 years of Warren Miller.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to kick the ski season off here on Saturday. And rumor has it, Jack, that there's 2 feet of powder up the mountain.
I drove up there with the fam on Saturday. We drove up and took a look at what's going on up at Schweitzer right now. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's snowy up there.
I heard there's 25 inches up there from somebody who lives on the webcams up there, you know, just every 5 minutes checks, you know, that a skier, of course.
Well, of course. This is good news. I feel like, was it just last year that they were struggling to get open in time for Thanksgiving?
Somewhere November 22nd they're aiming for. Not all the runs, but some of the runs. But good Lord, if it's 25 inches, get your shovels out.
Yeah. Are you a skier, Brendan? Skier, snowboarder, anything?
I am a skier. Yep. Okay. I'm a skier. Yep.
So this looks like it's going to be a good year, I guess.
I think
25
so.
25 inches is... That's a good...
Well, it's a lot better than last year.
Yeah.
A lot better.
Yeah.
Ask me if I'm a skier.
Jim?
I was raised in Indiana, where a 300-foot glacial moraine was nosebleed. You know, you'd hike up there. And so, no, I'm not.
Yeah.
And you're Minnesota.
Me neither. We went to Buck Hill a couple of times. That was our ski area.
Well, now listen, I was raised in Ohio.
Ooh.
And our ski hill, you actually skied down into a ravine. That was the ski hill.
From
the top.
From like sea level down. Yeah.
Would that have been in eastern Ohio?
Northeastern Ohio.
Northeastern Ohio. Okay. Okay. Interesting.
Well,
Minnesota, Indiana, and Ohio, you know, ski destinations.
Yeah.
Right.
Now the Warren Miller shows, I mean, you were mentioning it, but those almost need no publicity at all, because those, right. I think people show up for those.
Big following. It's kind of a party.
Yeah.
Doors are opening an hour before, so the show's at 7, and doors are opening at 6, and it's always pretty rowdy and fun, and people are getting hyped up for the season. So, yeah, get your you can get them at the door, or you can get them online. Get your tickets.
Okay. Well, that's exciting. Okay. And hey, how was turnout at on the 5th at Anchorman? You guys showed on election night. I know you decided to show a comedy movie and
yes,
the subject a little bit.
Turnout was pretty good.
Yeah,
pretty good. It was so on we marketed it as you're either going to celebrate or you're going to cry in your beer. And we had a little bit of both going on there, so we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. Were people like, I mean, were people in the audience kind of shouting out over the movie? You know, Ohio just went the other, you know.
Yeah, whenever we get those kind of cult classics at the Panada, people are pretty rowdy and vocal.
Yeah.
Well, the assumption is that it's a movie that they're familiar with if they haven't seen before. So that you're going with a group of people who know what's going to happen and can participate in the experience.
Totally.
Like talk to the movie.
Yeah. And for $5, you know, why not?
Yeah.
You know, you expect something different. $5. And then we've got some $2 Rainiers over there. So just be aware, folks. Be aware. We've got a great deal on beers going.
Yeah. You got another $5 movie coming up next for Friday, right?
We do. Yeah. Oh, brother, where art thou?
This is a good one.
It sure is.
Yeah. Great music. Great music. Great soundtrack.
Great music. And this one, Jim, you would probably know. This one is based loosely on the story of the Odyssey.
Story of the Odyssey. Absolutely. Yes. A very loose of, people, men trying to get back to their home, like Odysseus trying to get back to Ithaca and Penelope. So yeah, it's very loose. And then of course you have the sirens luring them away from their destination. So things happen to them as they make their journey back home, and it's very loosely, but you know, it's a theme that you find quite often in literature. And, yes. So yes, the Odyssey. Everybody should read it, by the way, before you go see O Brother, Where Art Thou?
I have an admission to make. I find the Odyssey to be difficult to read.
It's tedious. Well, it is, especially in the original Greek. Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
Great story.
I gotcha. Yeah. I know. I feel like didn't we have to? I don't know what. There's a million translations of it.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
You probably have to find the right one. I think I'm with Brendan that I never found the right one, but the story is great.
Well, go to Wikipedia.
Yeah.
You know, and just read the plot summary.
The plot summary is good. I mean, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou is great and does very loosely, but you can kind of see where they picked up all these elements from it.
And John Goodman's in it, and George Clooney.
George Clooney, yeah. Mm-hmm. And some of the best bluegrass players, so the soundtrack is fantastic.
Yeah.
And then they also had another CD come out, The Women, all bluegrass done by women, which is sort of interesting and awesome.
I think that one is, I mean, for all the impact that the movie had one way or another, I think the soundtrack is one of the, it's keeps coming up whenever you look at what's the best movie soundtrack that there is. Oh, Brother,
for sure.
That was always mentioned. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. Cool. Totally. Mm-hmm.
I know that kicked off kind of a resurgence of the genre.
Yeah.
Right.
I think it did. Yeah. I think it was a big, there was a big kind of bluegrass and renewed interest in bluegrass music after that. Mm-hmm. It is 8:58. I will mention that on Tuesday, this radio station is going to be in the Little Theater. We're doing the live radio hour on Tuesday, November 12th, Blurred is the band, and I am excited to say that we have maybe the only recording of Blurred that is available anywhere in our music library. Ooh, I was able to get an advanced, maybe a single? I don't know if they're going to release it as a single, but one track off their forthcoming album.
Very cool.
We were able to get. Now, I'll play that sometime after Bird Note. I'll come on and okay. and announce that. So stay tuned to the radio station for that. But
yeah,
little live radio hour on Tuesday night. Tune in 8 o'clock here on the radio station.
This is KRFY 88.5 Ponderé.
That Oops, radio that, station that, 88.5
that one.
or that means it's 9 o'clock, folks, and it is time for Bird Note.
I yep. do want to say tonight at 9 o'clock on my folks show, I'm going to be doing very early Joni Mitchell when she was a folk singer before she ever released her first album. And so this is, I'll be playing music with her from coffee houses in Canada in 63, 64. Mm. So before she discovered her songwriting skills and her musical composition skills, she was there plugging House of Rising Sun and other songs like that. So it's fun.
How'd you get the recording?
This is from Rhino yeah. Records did a 5-CD a set of Joni Mitchell before she hits it big time. And but then they have other sets of 5 CDs of her progress through her career. But I just love the early one. And she's trying hard.
Everyone starts somewhere.
Yeah. Okay. Other notes from the Panada? And I'll run down a couple other things going on in town, too, before we sign off.
Yeah. Of course, we've got the 97th birthday.
Yes.
Of the Panada Theater.
This is a big one.
Right. And so this is November 16th, L.A.-based Raquel Rodriguez coming out from L.A., bring in a unique blend of soul, rock, R&B. It's a dance show, and it's going to be high energy. It's going to be a lot of fun. And then the evening's going to be kicked off with Lucas Brown, Spokane rocker, and his new ensemble, The Nightmares. So they're going to warm up the stage. They're fantastic. Funk, rock, soul, and we're really looking forward to that.
Yeah. I think we have some of that, older Lucas Brown, in the library from, did he come out of Missoula originally? Do you know?
I only know him from being Spokane. From Spokane, okay. But maybe yeah. so.
Okay. I will mention this, tonight is the Get Plowed, party for the, Pine Street Woods. They are raising money for keeping the Pine Street Woods access roads cleared. That plowing is not free, and that if you've been up to the Pine Street Woods, you know that road would take some work to keep clear in the wintertime. It helped keep the road to your community forest trails open all year by participating in this event at McDuff's Beer Hall from 5 to 8 p.m. tonight, Thursday, November 7th, McDuff's Beer Hall. The KLT Get Plowed Party. Tomorrow is the Selkirk Ponderé Food Summit. We might be talking about next week. I'm sure Debbie Love and the food bank is participating in some fashion. But this is out of the Sandpoint Organic Agriculture Center. A one-day event tomorrow, Friday, November 8th. celebrate the foods and farms of the Selkirk Ponderé region. It's growing connections between farmers, ranchers, and foragers, as well as residents, restaurants, and retailers. There's presentations and participation events all day long. It's out at the Sandpoint Organic Agricultural Center. Which is out on North Boyer Road, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. tomorrow. IdahoFoodWorks.org for more information about that. And this weekend, there's a folk art exhibit that POAC is, the Kinnick-Sioux Folk School and POAC is putting on. It's also at the Sandpoint Organic Agricultural Center. So right after that, the Food Summit, you can come on down the next day to the Sandpoint Organic Organic Agricultural Center. This a folk art exhibit by the Idaho Commission on the Arts and in partnership with the Kinnick-Sioux Folk School and POAC, the Ponderé Arts Council. Okay. And then if you're interested in something completely different, the third annual Hot Wing Challenge on Sunday, November 10th at 2 p.m. at Powder Hound Pizza. How about that? That's what I got. That's our upcoming events. Brendan, thanks for coming in. Jim, tonight on the radio. Joni Mitchell, 9 o'clock. I guess with that, it's time for Bird Note, huh?
And then,
I'll be back. I'll be sitting right here, and I'll play a little blurred for you. You can get an idea of the band that's going to be playing on Tuesday night at the Little Theater and on these airwaves at 8 o'clock. So please join us for that. Now, here we go. It's Bird Note. Happy Thursday, folks.